Welcome into the Poetry Tavern, a place to discuss both reading and writing poetry, spotlighting new poems and ideas every week. Hello everyone to this week's episode of the Poetry Tavern. Welcome in. My name is Charlotte and I'm going to be your host today, as always. I don't know why I said today, as if that was specifically for this episode. So this week we're going to be talking about allegory poems. I think I explained this last time because we were talking about anthropomorphism in the last episode, and I just sort of like was thinking about all those fables that include anthropomorphism that are allegories. So I sort of jumped from one to the next and I immediately started taking notes, planning, digging up poems on the internet, because I know a lot of allegory, like, books, short stories, nursery rhymes, but I know a lot of poems, and maybe nursery rhymes are a subgenre of poetry, but I didn't know any other kinds of poems that had allegory in. I thought it would be really interesting to look into, and I was correct. Well, it was interesting for me, and we've got a couple interesting poems today to talk about that the allegory in them is, yeah, I just really like it. So instead of me waffling on in this intro, let's just get into the meat and potatoes of it all. So the first poem we're going to get into today is Sweet 18 by Shauna Pugh. I think I'm saying that name correctly. I always have this trouble where I'm like looking at a name and I think I understand what it says. Anyway, not the point of this podcast. Yeah, when I was looking for allegory poems and I was going online and I was looking at what people were saying their favourite allegory poems are, and I found this one and I read it through and I think it's ambiguous in a really fun and interesting way, so I'm just gonna get into it and see what y'all think. You move before me with all the unknown ease of your age, your face clear of the awareness that clouds mine, your only scars where you tried to shave before there was any need. When you speak, shyness makes your words short, and your hesitancy touches my heart. It stands to reason I must want you to stay like this. Who could wish to make away such innocence, such perfection? Who has never wished to put a stone through a great clear shining pane of glass? Who can see snow unbroken and not long to crunch the chill of it underfoot, to make their mark on white? What is canvas for but to take colour, though the artist's thought is no sooner fixed in paint than it begins to fall short of his hopes? You are a choice meal, so perfectly set out on the plate, that to disarrange one leaf, one floret, would be to vandalise a gracious pattern. But for all that, I'd let my tongue learn each taste and texture, the warm flesh juices and the eye's salt, the mind's crisp freshness. I would leave nothing. I'd be ivy, resting her lameness on the crutch of a young sapling, using his life, sucking it out of him. Think of me as old mother time, your parasite, your predator. Give her a smile, glass of light, and stay clear. Now, when I was first reading this poem through and sort of trying to come up with ideas about it, I was thinking about the possibilities. Because it is vague, like, although some of the imagery comes across a little, I'm going to say sexual, maybe that's just because of the connection that's been formed culturally, between, like, devouring and sexual imagery. But really, it's a poem about the disruption of innocence and wanting to steal the youth of another, or at least break it to put them on the speaker's level. Yeah, it almost speaks to a sort of thing you feel, like a jealousy of that innocence, that unawareness of the world. And I think I'm also really interested in people who look at this poem and go, it's mother talking about her son. Like, knowing that if she doesn't let him go, she'll eventually be the cause of his pain, that she'll eventually break him. And I mean, not let go as in, like, never talk to him again, but let go as in let him be free of her and, you know, free to live his own life, which I think is really interesting because I think there's a perception that a mother's love is not something that is destructive. But you see a lot of stories of overbearing mothers and things of the like. So I think there is evidence that, you know, even love when there's no physical pain or anything of the sort can be disruptive and unhealthy. And I think the speaker in this poem has an awareness whether that love is romantic, sexual, or, you know, I want to say fraternal, but I think that's fatherly. Maternal. This awareness that their love is something intense, and they also feel this level of jealousy, and the level of self-awareness in it, specifically being like, get out, like, I know what I'm thinking, I know what I'm becoming, get out. So, yeah, it's so, so fun and interesting. And I keep saying I'm going to stop saying the word fun, but it just is the first word that pops into my head. I think, in the sense of this being an allegory poem, and that's sort of being the whole theme of the whole episode, we sort of see... Yeah, I keep going back to this awareness. I think this is a lesson of being aware of your own feelings and knowing how they affect other people. Even people who are close to you, like, not just, like, the stranger you pass on the street, like, the way you feel and think and act and how it affects other people, even subconsciously. So, yeah, I think just... Yeah, it's interesting. Our second poem is Indian Weavers by Sarojini Naidu. This one, it almost feels... I have a lot... I have a lot to say about the very human elements of it, but also the very mythical elements of it and the way that they almost come together. But I'll just read the poem and then we'll get into it afterwards, because talking about it beforehand and then reading the poem, it's like, whole thing. Anyway, let me get into it. Weavers, weaving at break of day, why do you weave a garment so gay? Blue as the wing of a halcyon wind, we weave the robes of a newborn child. Weavers, weaving at fall of night, why do you weave a garment so bright? Like the plumes of a peacock, purple and green, we weave the marriage veils of a queen. Weavers, weaving solemn and still, what do you weave in the moonlight chill? White as a feather and white as a cloud, we weave a dead man's funeral shroud. This poem is beautiful in its simplicity. I mean, it's literally... four stanzas, and there's repetition in there, and there's all that fun stuff. But I think what really caught me is, like, the idea of this weaving. When I think of, like, weaving the tapestry of life, like, there's a... people talk about the tapestry of life as, like, a big, colourful, complex thing. But I think when I think of weaving the tapestry of life, it's often my mind go back to the Fates. I know they weren't necessarily weaving, because I know there's some adaptations where it's like, it doesn't matter, it's about the string and the thread. But weaving was a thing common in Greek mythology. But I always think of these inhuman characters when I think of weaving in a more metaphysical sense, which, I mean, I suppose is probably a connection to, like, oh, the gods are the ones who impact our lives and they're the ones that have the say, or, oh, fate is inhuman, it doesn't care, it doesn't feel, it doesn't think, it just is. But I think in this there's a very human sense of weaving a lifetime. And maybe it's not necessarily about actually creating these moments, but rather about the way you experience them. But if we take it through the lens of creating these moments in our lives, it feels very human to sort of say, this is the life I weaved together with my own hands, with my own actions. And it moves it away from that very metaphysical description of the tapestry of life and puts it into the hands of humanity in a really interesting way. And it'll just, it's just so beautiful, and it's so, I think if you were to like look at it and just read it through, it almost seems to like, it's just so, so pure. And it's not, I don't want to say it's simple, but it like, it's, there's just something beautiful about the conciseness of it. Concise is the word I'm looking for. There's just something like beautiful about that. Righto. Well, that brings us to the end of our episode. Thank you all for listening to me genuinely gush about these poems, because I think sometimes I find a poem and don't talk about it until I get on mic, and then I just end up like saying things out loud and then processing them in my brain as I'm saying them. And sometimes that leads me to say things in the moment that I'm not quite 100% certain of. And I know I could always edit around things, but like coming to that realization in real time is part of what's fun about poetry. And I think I often don't have those realizations until I start talking about it and like discussing it and having these conversations, which is why I think they're really important. You know, if you're listening, thanks for listening to me coming to realizations about poetry. Like, I don't know that much about poetry. I mean, I thought I did. I thought I knew poetry, but the more I learn about it every time, I just learn to love it more. So yeah, thanks. Anyway, sorry for waffling on again. Next week's episode is going to be a bit random, because I've sometimes, you know, jumped from one to the next in a logical sense. We're moving away from logic. I'm going with puns. I really like puns. I grew up telling a lot of puns. My dad tells a lot of puns. And I found some, like, really fun pun poems. Let's reconvene and we will talk about puns next time. See ya.